Good morning, everyone. We're going to hear oral arguments today in 9 cases, and we will be taking each one under advisement and issue either opinions or orders resolving the appeals in due course. First case is appeal number 08-1133, Johnson versus Orr. Ms. Blanchard.
Good morning, Your Honors. Terry Blanchard on behalf of the appellant. Your Honor, the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine does not apply in this case. The first prong of the case is that this appellant must be a state court loser. In this case, appellant is not a state court loser because the September 6th agreed order was not a final order. Appellant agreed to the September 6th order because the state's attorney had told appellant that a small tract of the land represented on the lot description on the order was exempt. Now, the agreed order only addressed one of two lots that the appellant was to receive via the tax deed. Based on the state's attorney's representations, he agreed to the September 6th order.
Let me ask you, just Rooker-Feldman aside, this property is subject to a right of redemption, correct?
Correct.
And if it appears that this tax delinquency was issued by mistake and that there was no tax delinquency, and if that's the case, what right would he have, Rooker-Feldman aside, enforce the certificate of purchase that he received?
The owner of the property never redeemed the property. What happened was there was a misunderstanding about whether it was exempt.
But it was never a property, apparently, that was delinquent on its taxes.
I do believe it was delinquent on the taxes, Your Honor. I think the question was whether it was exempt or not because it was for public use.
Right. If it's exempt, it wasn't delinquent on its taxes.
But correct? We disagree with the exemption status. And as the tax purchaser, he doesn't really have standing or an opportunity to have something adjudged exempt or not exempt, because that's the owner's responsibility. And under the statute, only the owner can apply for the exemption or say that it should not be exempt. So he really doesn't have an opportunity in the state court to adequately address his arguments.
So why did he sign that agreed order?
He thought, based on the state's attorney's representation at the time, that it was exempt. The state's attorney said, hey, we have a little problem here. Well,
if he didn't have the ability to contest that or dispute it, why did his signature matter at all in that agreed order?
Well, he did contest it because he filed an amended pleading right after that.
So he had an opportunity to challenge it in the state court.
Well, what happened was when he went back, the state's attorney refused to rectify the earlier problem with the agreed order. So he gets an opportunity to file an amended application for the tax deed. He goes back to the state court judge and says, Judge, I went to the land, I saw the land, I don't see an exemption. Based on that representation, the state court judge says, okay, I'll give you leave to file your amended application for issuance of the tax deed. So he does this. So when he does this, the court issues further orders. The court sets it for prove up. He proves his case up, shows that he meets all the statutory requirements once again, and the court allows him to file an amended complaint. At this point, what usually happens is the state's attorney and the tax purchaser have an agreed order saying that the tax deed is due to the tax purchaser. In this case, the state's attorney refused to sign the order to turn over the property. The appellant goes back to...
And that's the relief you want here, or part of the relief your client wants.
Well, I mean,
you want the federal court to order the issuance of the deed.
Well, at this point, our 1981 rights have been violated because the state's attorney is essentially blocking our ability to get the land. Now, they're essentially blocking our ability to get it, and now we have, I guess, additional rights as our civil rights have been violated. We have additional grievances.
You brought a 1981 claim.
It's partially based on that, yeah. There's a cause of action.
I thought it was only a 1983.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. It's just a 1983 action.
Has any refund been tendered for the tax certificate?
It could be, and there are interest.
Has one been tendered?
No, nothing has been tendered. What essentially has happened, the state's attorney has refused to deal with the property anymore. They wrote void on the deed, on the proposed order, which would have turned over the property, essentially blocking appellant's ability to get any relief. So the state court judge says, go back and talk to the state's attorney. The state's attorney worked something out. The state's attorney has refused to do that. They're citing that September 6th order, and we're saying the order is wrong. And we've been given an opportunity by the state court judge to address this. It's not a final order. There was additional litigation after that September 6th agreed order. And there were additional orders entered. There is a line of cases that Judge Anderson relied on in the lower court ruling that an agreed order is the basis for res judicata. That case that he relied on, Jackson versus Callahan, was a settlement agreement dismissing a case with prejudice. This is not what happened in this case. It wasn't dismissed with prejudice. There was further litigation. He filed an amended application for a tax deed. There were further proceedings in the matter, so there really is no way that could be a final order for res judicata.
You're heavy into your rebuttal time here if you want to save some.
I'll save some. Thank you.
Mr. Castiglione.
Your Honors, good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Paul Castiglione, and I represent the defendants in this matter. Your Honors, plaintiffs bought a certificate of purchase for that evidenced a tax sale from the Cook County Collector for of an allegedly delinquent 2002 real estate taxes for a parcel of land in Cook County with PIN number 15-12-307-023-000. In accordance with Section 2130 of the Property Tax Code, the collector subsequently filed an application in an Illinois court to declare that this tax sale was an error because the property was in fact owned by a park district. The state's attorney in the case discovered it was in fact land owned by a governmental body, filed this application. On September 6, 2006, a state court of competent jurisdiction entered an agreed order finding that the property was owned by a taxing district, declaring the tax sale to be an error, ordering the refund of the cost of the tax certificate plus interest in accordance with sections 21310 and 21315 of the Property Tax Code, dismissing the case due to the sale and error, and entering language finding no just reason for delaying either enforcement or appeal of the order pursuant to Supreme Court Rule 304A. That order was a final order. Final order determining conclusively that the sale of the taxes, 2002 taxes for this parcel, was a sale and error. Instead of seeking further relief from an Illinois court, either a trial court or an appellate court, plaintiff opted to file this federal lawsuit. It's true plaintiffs did attempt or were given leave to file an amended complaint, which plaintiffs did not do. More importantly, plaintiffs never attempted to vacate the September 6, 2006 order. And even at the time this lawsuit was filed in federal court, plaintiffs certainly had the remedy under Section 2, 1401 of the Illinois Code of Civil Procedure to come in and have the order vacated if he could have shown that he'd acted with due diligence and had a meritorious defense. If plaintiff's position here is that the PIN number, the parcel of land, includes land owned by perhaps a governmental entity, but also by someone else. But I think that's not the thing the court should focus on. The point is that argument, that evidence could have been offered in the state court. And as this court found in Johnson versus Illinois Supreme Court, a plaintiff cannot hold back an argument to create federal jurisdiction for a federal lawsuit. And as in Johnson, the Rooker-Feldman doctrine bars plaintiff's attempt to create a federal cause of action here. In fact, I would point out to plaintiff's position that the initial tax sale being was itself a final order, that position would read Section 21.310 of the property tax code out of the statute, and that would not be good public policy. That section gives the collector the authority to come in cases where taxes are sold as delinquent when, in fact, that's not the case. And clearly, the property tax code contemplates giving the Cook County collectors the latitude to be able to come in and where taxes are sold in error and come in and seek correction, which is exactly what happened here. Your Honor, as the district court below found, this court's decision in Bethel All Nations Church versus City of Chicago is controlling, just as the plaintiff in that suit could have filed a Section 214.01 motion to alleging that the property in that case was tax exempt. Mr. Johnson could have likewise filed a 214.01 motion to vacate the September 6, 2006 order. He did not do so. This court was clear in Bethel All Nations that the Rooker-Feldman doctrine precluded federal jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction over a civil rights suit, and I think the same is true here. Plaintiffs attempted to get around the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, citing the case Nesses versus Shepard, but as we argued in our brief, that case is distinguishable. In Nesses, the plaintiffs alleged that it was a case out of Indiana where a breach of contract case where the plaintiff alleged that there was a conspiracy between the court and the parties involved, and there is no such allegation here. And what's more, I think again the germane point is the basis for plaintiff's position is that again there's land involved here that's not tax exempt. And that's an argument that could have been brought, but never was brought, to the state court. So Nesses is distinguishable, and we believe Bethel All Nations Church is on point. In addition to the Rooker-Feldman doctrine...
Before we leave the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, there is one count in the complaint that deals with the Interstate Land Sales Full Disclosure Act, a federal statute. Is this something that can be disposed of under the Rooker-Feldman doctrine? Or is there an independent basis of jurisdiction in this court with respect to that?
Independently, Your Honor, that that claim it fails on the merits in any event because the instant case does not involve the sale or lease of lots in a subdivision. And as a result of that, Section 1709A of that statute provides a cause of action against any developer or agent. And none of these defendants fall into that category.
Was that claim ever raised in the state courts?
That claim, I believe, was not raised in the state courts. In fact, no claim was essentially nothing was ever raised in the state courts other than the order entered on the collector's application having the declaration of a sale and error. In addition, Your Honor, to the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, the Tax Injunction Act also bars federal jurisdiction here. And again, I'd cite Bethel All Nations again, as well as other cases from this court, Wright versus Pappas.
Difficulty, seeing how this impedes the collection of a tax. I mean, after all, if this gentleman gets his land,
right,
it's going to be back on the tax rolls, and the government's going to get taxes for it. How does this impede the collection of a tax?
Your Honor, I take that reasonably. I understand the court's point, but I would say that the tax collection is a unified process and it's a unified system. And to the extent the plaintiffs are asking federal courts to take jurisdiction over an issue whether a tax sale was appropriate, it really could go both ways. You know, federal court could declare a tax sale invalid, or in this case, plaintiff is saying that the court should declare in essence, the declaration of a sale and error to be invalid. But either way, it would affect the overall unified system of tax collection, and in that sense, run afoul of the Tax Injunction Act. Your Honors, we had. I've also seen. I'm running a little short on time. In addition to the theories why the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction, we also advanced arguments on the res judicata, law of the case, and collateral estoppel. Just briefly address those. This plaintiff, again, did enter an agreed order. Entered an agreed order agreeing that the sale of taxes for this particular parcel of property with this PIN number was done in error. There was language, again, under Rule 3 or 4A included in the order authorizing appeal. That wasn't done. No motion to under 214-1 to set that aside. That's a final order. And we believe, Your Honors, and even if this court had subject matter jurisdiction, which we believe it does not, res judicata law in the case and collateral estoppel would bar relitigation of plaintiff's proposed Section 1983 claims as well as state law tort claims as well. And I had one last argument on the merits. We also argued that under what plaintiffs are essentially asking for here is economic loss in the number of tort claims, that even if you went beyond collateral estoppel, res judicata law of the case, even if they got around subject matter jurisdiction, the Mormon doctrine would bar the claims for economic loss that plaintiffs bring here in tort. So, Your Honor, if this court has no other questions, we'd ask for those reasons that this court affirm the decision of the district court dismissing this case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Okay. Thank you.
Blanchard, anything further?
Yes, just a few things, Your Honors. One thing is that the Bethel case is not comparable to this current case. Bethel involved property owners. Property owners have the right to challenge the exemption status of their properties. The tax purchasers don't. So in that way, this case is more like the Long case, in which this court found that Rooker-Feldman did not apply because the matters at issue are not inextricably intertwined. Our tax objector or the appellant in this case didn't have standing under the statute to get the exemption, to follow through with the exemption, or really even challenge the exemption under the Illinois law. I would argue also, Your Honor, that res judicata does not apply. If that September 6th agreed order was the last thing that happened in the case, perhaps Eppley would be correct. It wasn't the last thing that happened. There was an amended filing. There was a prove-up on that amended filing. There was subsequent discussion with the state judge on that amended filing. And for that reason, we think that Rooker-Feldman does not apply. Your Honors, we ask that this case be remanded back to the district court judge for further ruling.
Your client is a lawyer?
Yes.
Yes, okay, because he had filed his own pro se brief, and I didn't notice that you were involved in the case. You did a very fine job.
I was just retained a couple weeks ago, Your Honor.
Excellent job. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Castiglione. We're ready for case two.